This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And this week, we're back. We're back in the desert. We're back with the contactees. Now, before we get rolling here, I have... How's that song go by Foo Fighters? I got another confession to make.
You're a fool?
I am a fool.
Oh,
because
who would have thought? Wait, what episode is this? How many has it taken?
This is episode 86, 87.
He has admitted it.
Boom.
My work here is done.
But it's not because I believe in aliens.
Oh.
In fact, it might be because I believe in aliens so much that I want to make sure that we all have a nice, complete understanding of aliens. And to that end, I... regret and or depending on your own personal perspective on us and this series, I'm overjoyed to inform you that this is now part four of a five-part series on and I might actually go back and like change it, right? Because parts one and two, definitely about the Cold War. We had nuclear weapons, we had cosmonauts and astronauts. Parts three through five are just about the contactees.
Metamorphosis. Yeah. It's become something else.
We are different now. These
say that again.
Preachers of extraterrestrial gospel that we have become. So this is either part five of our series on UFOs in the Cold War, or if you'd like it, or sorry, part four, or if you prefer, it is part two in our three-part series on contactees. So, and I'm sure it'll stop there because I am refusing to cover any more contactees after this. Now, last
only
week,
had learned earlier.
and I apologize, Jason. It's simply poor planning. There's no malice in it. So anyway.
Lies.
He'll
excuses.
Hopefully believe that later.
You were typing that out and you're like, Jason's gonna suck it up.
What a fool.
He's gonna hate it.
What a fool. Weak.
I don't know what that
when
was.
When do you
like,
break them,
Saruman?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're looking at, you may remember last week I said we were going to do this episode and then take a week off, not partially because Super Smash Bros. Comes out in 2 days, but also because we were going to do some show prep for a larger series, something really quite good that I'm excited to give you. How it's going to end up now is that this is part four or two. Next week will be part five or three. Then, because it's the week before Christmas, we're going to do like Halloween. That was, I literally said Christmas.
Halloween.
We are going to do holiday myths, spooky traditions. I don't know. Probably not talk about Krampus because that's been done. Then,
like 1,500 times.
Yeah. Then we're going to take a week off for Christmas, which is good. Spend it with your families. Go listen to you know, a back catalog or something if you really need
a hit.
And then we'll be back in the new year with that super...
I'd love to be someone's drug.
Right? We'll be back...
That's such an honor.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me ruin your life.
Hey, there's worse things to be addicted to than our voices.
That's true. The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Should I cut that? I'm going to leave that in. Anyway.
Shots fired right there.
And then, don't at me. And then, in the new year, after that week off, we'll be back with that big series. So, I just wanted to let all of you know the general outline of how I messed up, why I messed up, and what we're going to do about it. So, I hope you all found joy in that one way or the other. Just as I hope you find joy in the interplanetary tale I'm about to tell you.
Is now, it a love story, Sam?
In a way, it's a story of madness, of obsession,
That doesn't sound
and
like
desire.
Love. Wait, yeah. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, yeah. See? It's basically The Great Gatsby, but with aliens, I'll tell you. So it's not.
Some parties, eh?
Yeah, so.
Perfect.
Okay, wait, I need to do this.
Yes.
I keep forgetting to do this every single week, and I'm sorry. This is really weird, but I would like to eulogize a goat real quick, if that's okay with everybody.
A goat?
I'm really sorry to break the flow here.
Was there a sacrifice?
No, you'd think.
I was hoping I would have been invited.
When you hear something like that, you would think. No, so I've been meaning to do this for quite a while now, but I just keep forgetting. When I get in the chair to actually do this, I just kind of freak out a little bit and forget all of my plans that are not written down on paper.
We are still talking about a goat.
Well, I'm talking about the eulogy of the goat itself.
Okay.
So we just want to give a shout out to the human friend / caretaker of, I want to say it's Youper. Youper? Youper. Y-O-O-P-E-R. Youper? What do you think?
We'll go. I'd say Youper. Yeah.
Youper. Okay. We just want to give a shout out to Youper the goat, or Youper's owner. Youper is a Twitter goat, a literal goat, that started following me on Twitter back in May, shortly after, right around the time that we did the Goat Man episode.
Uh-huh.
And his first tweet to me, and third tweet overall, was, "I heard those guys on Not Alone Pod talking about goats."
I think I remember seeing that.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I can dig it. And in any case, Youper, this is weird, but Youper was a goat. He was a really quite cute goat. Like, and I hate goats. And it just seems that he was a really cool dude. And unfortunately, he passed away last month at the age of 9 years old. And Youper, wherever you are, you tiny little thing, you're going to be missed. And if your human friend or caretaker is listening, we just want to extend our deepest condolences in that we know how hard it can be to lose a friend. So, okay. I know that was weird. I'm sorry. I had to do it. So
To Youper.
L'chaim. So, now that I've interrupted the flow of everything quite a few times, I'm going to take us back. Jason, do you have any eulogies you'd like to deliver or general announcements you'd like to make?
No, I'm good.
All right.
We are set. Let's set sail here.
All right. Sail into the future.
Oblivion?
Well, technically the past. So, what we're looking at today in part two of part three. In our Cold War series, which part three is covering contactees. Now, last week, you'll remember, we talked about two of the earlier contactees, people that I said built the foundation. They dug the foundation, they laid it, and they really established the contactee movement in its own right.
Wait, I thought we put some walls up, too.
Today... Well, maybe we did put.
Yeah, no, we okay. put.
True.
Yeah, episode one of part three was the foundation.
That's
and
true.
Then last week was the walls. This is your metaphor.
Yeah, my metaphor is off track.
You're off track, Sam.
I will say that Daniel Fry built the foundation of the contactee movement. George Adamski built the walls of that particular home that so many people have... regrettably or not regrettably, depending on your purview, decided to live in. Today, we're going to talk about the man who built a second story and slapped a roof on it. Next week, we'll be talking about the man who hangs up the Christmas lights. That's not a meta. That's
Is
not
it a Griswold?
Joke. No. But let's focus today on this person whom, without this individual, it is very likely that the contactee movement would have died.
So he's the one.
Very
I can blame.
Quickly, you very well can.
Perfect.
As well as the public consciousness around UFOs, for better or worse, would have been different without him. Now, in 1952, if you'll remember, this was approximately the same time period that Adamski and Fry were experiencing their own sightings of saucers and talking with humanoid, beautiful Venusians and Adam and Eve and all of that. If you don't remember, go back to last episode. It was in these years, the early 50s, that another UFO event, however, was taking place. And again, this one took place in the desert of Southern California, in what I would label is the spookiest of deserts, the Mojave. Do you remember the Mojave incident, Jason?
I remember.
That is the spookiest of deserts.
That was my Vicks pitch.
Yes. Yeah. And guess what we got from that?
Nothing.
Absolutely. A laugh? Not even a
few laughs.
Well, hopefully
maybe.
A laugh. We didn't even get a sponsorship nibble on that.
Not even
so.
A shout out.
I don't even think Vicks knows we exist.
That's fine. Under the radar.
How bizarre.
That's the way I want it to be.
Now, the man leading this movement that we're going to look at here is a man by the name of George Van Tassel. Now, he was an... Oh, did you have something to say?
No, that's just a fantastic name.
It is a good
George
name.
Van Tassel.
It is I, George Van Tassel.
It's like a fake name from Seinfeld.
It does sound like that.
Wait a second, Sam, is this guy real?
He's part of the Van Tassel Corporation, yes. So, George Van Tassel, he was an Ohioan. I think that's what that is. Someone from Ohio. Now, he was born in 1910, and he moved to California in the 30s, where he would eventually go on to work as an aircraft mechanic and flight inspector for some of the biggest aerospace companies in the world, including Lockheed, as well as Hughes. But before all that, he started at a garage owned by his uncle. Simply an auto mechanic and nothing more, toiling away in the harsh California heat. But it was there that he met a man who would change his life forever. This is the loneliest man in the world. His name was Frank Kritzer. He was an old prospector who told Van that he had leased the land around a sacred native landmark by the name of Giant Rock, which is the world's supposedly, as far as we can tell, the world's largest freestanding boulder. It stands at over 7 stories tall.
Sweet Jesus.
It's
that's
very
a big
large.
Rock.
It's very large. And it's like, you hear that, you're like, okay, it's a big rock. So what? It is impressive.
7 stories? How wide is that thing? Is
it's very wide.
Oh my,
yeah,
wait,
it's
wait.
Roughly
the
size
of Google.
It's more than roughly. It is probably like...
Giant rock.
It is more than the size of a house or two, honestly.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, if it's 7 stories...
It's just Giant Rock is just the name of it. It's very inventive. It's ginormous. I'm going to let Jason look at it for a second here.
That's a big stone, my friend.
It's one big stone, buddy.
Hopefully no one had to pass that.
Good Lord. That's like something out of a creation myth.
God. Or Paul Bunyan.
Yeah. Now... Right. Kritzer.
Paul Bunyan was the giant with the blue ox,
yeah,
right?
Babe and the blue ox. Babe the blue ox.
Yeah.
Oh, Paul Bunyan, he cut down the tree. He cut down the tree that made a house for you and me, Paul Bunyan. I just made that up, but it sounds like it could be a folk song. Now, Kritzer was a lone prospector, right? He claimed that he was working on claims of gold and silver in the ground around this massive rock, and that underneath it he had built a room in which to live, a kind of subterranean mining headquarters. Now, all of this sounds fairly normal. You have a very large rock, and you have the idea that it is held in high regard.
It's probably one of the only few landmarks out there.
Exactly.
I mean, in that part,
especially
I'd imagine
the desert itself. Yeah.
How'd it get there? Geologists, where are you at?
Yeah, tell us. If you know anything about how a rock travels, the pioneers used to ride these baby go. For miles.
Oh man,
I hate
SpongeBob
it.
And you memes.
Yeah, that's right. RIP, the guy who created SpongeBob as well.
That should be like our subtitle.
Yeah. What? The pioneers used to ride these babies?
No, just eulogies.
Yeah, that's some space eulogies for y'all. So... this sounds relatively normal, right? I'm a prospector. I work in the desert. I'm looking for gold. This is
the desert's a weird place to be looking for gold, though.
I understand. Now, Kritzer claims that in addition to working for gold, or as I like to think of it, as instead of just him adding this on, I like to think of Van Tassel working on his car and the two of them talking as they do and having this conversation. And as Kritzer gets to know Van Tassel a little more and maybe drops his guard a little bit, he starts to talk about some other things. He mentions how there are great glass tubes running throughout the desert ground, and that intermittently they will emit sound like radio static. Now, the two spoke more and more, and Kritzer started to make references to rare minerals and things that could be used to create a philosopher's stone.
Okay, I've had enough of this guy.
I can't.
Wait, was this 1932? 1952?
Oh, no. This was the 30s still, yeah.
Okay.
This was 1930s.
We're in the 30s, uh-huh. And we're talking about a philosopher's stone.
I can't wait.
We're talking about alchemy.
I can't wait until we talk about alchemy for real one day. We have to. I love alchemy. It's so dope.
The principle behind it is great. It's fantastical science. It is wonderful, and it led to real science being done, which is great, and I'm all about that. But we gotta let it go sometime.
Now, Van Tassel, he was about 20 years old at the time, and he was intrigued by this man's strange claims.
Moldable.
If someone came up to you and was like, hey, I know where a philosopher's stone stone is and or can make one, would you just go with them?
No. I would laugh. Youth, I would laugh and tell them they're wrong.
Youth does not necessarily indicate gullibility.
Well, Sam, the only reason why I'm like this is because we've been doing this for 2 years, and I have to find counter-arguments for everything
that's
we do.
That's fair. It's just programmed into you at this point.
Yeah, and now I'm just like, ha. That's all I got. just ha.
I thought for sure you were going to have some witty retort. Nope. All right.
I did, and then I left it behind. Maybe I need a philosopher's stone.
That's fair.
Fix my mind.
All right. So, Van Tassel, he's about 20 years old at the time, and he was understandably intrigued by the man's strange claims. He ended up fixing the vehicle at no cost. And he even went ahead.
A mechanic fixing something at no cost?
He even went ahead.
This story can't be true.
Went so far as to provide old Kritzer with some food, some cash, even. The agreement between the two men was that this was no simple gift. This was a guarantee that if anything should be found, Van Tassel would also have his own stake in the claims. Now, he had no idea how good of a return on investment he was going to get out of this. Now, Kritzer left that same day, and while he and Van Tassel stayed in touch, there were no mystical discoveries that came about. There was no gold or silver either, and there definitely was no alchemical magic that was discovered. Now, Kritzer was an exceptionally lonely person. He even, there in the desert, he decided to create a makeshift airstrip to welcome pilots down to rest and for a meal, some company in the middle of their voyage. It's interesting, there's actually before Van Tassel and all of this, there's an article about Kritzer in, I think it's Popular Mechanics back in the 1940s, where they profile him and they talk about how like on Saturdays he just has picnics for pilots and that people would just come and land in the desert and spend some time with him. And then they'd leave him alone
in
the desert.
They will come.
Exactly. And he was just an exceptionally lonely individual. And while he never struck it rich, he stayed.
He must have worked retail.
He stayed pretty busy until 1942. Now at that point, Kritzer, A German immigrant, was unfortunately cast in an unflattering light by the advent of World War II. It also didn't help that he was a German immigrant who was literally living under a rock in the desert, equipped with broadcasting gear and a makeshift airport. You can see where the idea that maybe there was some domestic espionage going on came through. Now, there's a few different ways that this pans out, theoretically. There's a few different stories. The first one is that the police go and they speak to Kritzer, and Kritzer is a deranged, crazy person, and he ends up lighting off his store of dynamite in an attempt to destroy the sheriff and his deputy, because he is a full-blown German Nazi spy, and he was scared they were going to find his equipment and this and that and the other thing. The other side of this, and I'll let you guess who tells that story, the other side of this is that the sheriff and his deputy, they do go speak to him, and he is a little bit cagey, edgy. He will not let them in. And after a series of back and forth, eventually they try to use a smoke grenade or something non-lethal but still uncomfortable to gas him out of his home. And when they do, they throw it down this hatch. It bounces in. It hits the dynamite. The dynamite explodes. It blows him to pieces. And then unfortunately, the sheriff's deputy also gets blown to pieces too. The truth is probably more on that side, I would say. Just,
yikes.
Yeah. Either way, it's not a great situation, but I think that if you're a sheriff with a dead deputy and a lonely old prospector who everybody kind of liked, and now they're both in pieces, I think the easier story to tell would be the first one. But yeah. Who knows?
He's playing us all.
Exactly. Who knows for sure? We won't for a very long time, if at all. But Van Tassel...
I want to go with if at all. That's my stake. It's been, what, 50 years? 60, 66 years?
That's not necessarily what I was referring to.
Oh.
Van Tassel, he is eventually notified of this. He gets word of Kritzer's death. And when he does, it sets off this chain of events that culminates in 1947 when Van Tassel, and it should be noted that he went by to his friends. He was just Van. And I think that's probably how I'm going to refer to him from here, so I don't say Van Tassel like 45,000 times. Van, as it were, goes to the Bureau of Land Management, and he procures either a lease or the purchasing. He eventually purchases this area, but I believe it starts with a lease. And he gets the lease to live in and work around Giant Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And he, with what I assume would be a considerable amount of cleanup, he renovates the apartment underneath.
Wait, it was still livable?
It was still livable. What? It was still there. And the rock was fine. The rock persisted.
Well, I mean,
the rock lived on. What can I say except you're welcome? So that's a Moana reference. The Rock, he sings that song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now that's stuck in my head. Thanks. Yeah,
it's so good. You're welcome. So it was a little worse for wear, as you might imagine, but it was livable. And
that's bizarre.
I know.
You couldn't have had that much dynamite in there then.
No, but enough to blow a man up.
Yeah.
But how much dynamite is that?
Probably not very much.
Probably a stick.
Yeah.
Right?
Because I think all the shrapnel and stuff it generates inside of an apartment.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Bad stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, so he renovates. He's in the apartment. Go.
He's living under there. So he
wait. He's living under a rock?
Yes. Quite literally.
All right.
That's the joke.
Took me a while, but I got there.
That's okay. Now, he has been, like I said, a mechanic for all of his life. As far as how he's actually making money, he does take this land and he develops it into a full-blown airport. That's not fair. But a functioning airstrip.
There we go.
At least.
Okay.
That can be used to house and land and take off and this and that and the other thing. He also builds an inn, or at least leases an inn, that is used by pilots and travelers alike. And he makes his living this way.
Yeah, isn't that very entrepreneurial of him?
It is, it is. It sounds like a pretty good life. Now, he split his time...
Besides for the fact that you're in the desert.
Right. Literally under a rock. But apparently, shade. Living under the rock, yeah, it had its good stuff. It would, I can't even talk today. In the winter, the rock would keep heat in, and in the summer... it would keep heat out. So it kind of regulated the temperature pretty well. Not a bad place to live under the rock with the ghost of your dead best friend. But his wife and kids, they were not as thrilled at this prospect. They kept a house elsewhere, and he split his time between the two of them, pretty much. And he had a good life. He was fine. Under the rock, he would spend hours meditating. This was something that he did for a number of years.
Well, you can't get internet out there, so, I mean, what else do you do?
Even in the 21st century, I don't know if we'd be able to beam Wi-Fi directly under the rock.
Cable would have been rough. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, how else are you going to spend your day?
And as he sits there meditating, after years, he has the first in a series of interactions. Now, Van Tassel claimed to have channeled an intelligence by the name of Ashtar. Now, as we'll remember last week, channeling is the only way you can get reliable info about Atlantis. It is the only possible way to learn the secrets of the universe, and it essentially it consists of sitting on your floor, closing your eyes, and talking.
And for then, 10 small payments of $49.95, you can have all this.
You can learn to channel yourself. From the future. Whoa, see what I did there?
Language
is fun. So, Van Tassel, he's channeling. And he's speaking with this person, Ashtar. Now, the date here is July 18th, 1952, and the message that he received was something that was truly, truly astounding. And the entire reason as to why Van Tassel is even being talked about to this day. One way or the other, this is what solidifies him in the public consciousness. The first of many, and I do mean many, messages that Van claimed to have channeled is as follows. Now, he's going to refer to the Earth as Shan or Shan, H-A-S-H-A-N. So keep that in mind. I'm going to say Shan. Now I'm going to say Shan because that's what I think it is. So
Shan, that's what I read.
It fits that spelling a little better. Yeah. So, all right. Hail to you, beings of Shan. I greet you in love and peace. My identity is Ashtar, Commandant Quadra Sector, Patrol Station Shrare. All projections, all waves.
I love how he's talking about what his job is when we have no context to what the hell that means.
Greetings through the Council of the Seven Lights. You have been brought here.
Again,
what? Inspired with the inner light to help your fellow man.
Ah.
You are mortals, and other mortals can only understand that which their fellow man can understand. The purpose of this organization is, in a sense, to save mankind from himself. Some years ago, your time, your nuclear physicists penetrated the Book of Knowledge. They discovered how to explode the atom. Disgusting as the results have been that this force should be used for destruction, it is not compared to that which can be. We have not been concerned with their explosion of plutonium and uranium-235, the uranium mother element. This atom is an inert element. We are concerned, however, with their attempt to explode the hydrogen element. This element is life-giving, along with five other elements in the air you breathe, in the water you drink, in the composition of your physical substance, hydrogen. Their efforts in the field of science have been successful to the extent that they are not content to rest on the laurels of a power beyond their use, not content with the entire destruction of an entire deity at a time. They must have something more destructive. They've got it. When they explode the hydrogen atom, they shall extinguish life on this planet. And scene. How was that? That was pretty good. I felt good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got into it at least. I felt what Ashtar felt, which is the whole point of channeling.
Anger. I'm pretty sure that was just from the squeaky toy.
Desperate. I was very angry about the squeaky toy.
I got real nervous for a second. Like, oh, I've never seen that happen before.
So then
we have a divine message. Our savior.
Ashtar. Yes.
Cool.
He is here to save us from ourselves.
Mm.
Supposedly.
Doesn't sound like any Captain Marvel to me.
supposedly an extraterrestrial being speaking directly in opposition to mankind's atomic and nuclear ambitions, Ashtar would send a whole other heap of messages. And what's interesting is that he was taken far beyond the ideas of Van Tassel. See, every week, Van Tassel would have channeling sessions at Giant Rock, and in a move that I think is actually quite admirable, and most likely the reason why we don't necessarily remember him or why he didn't become a harmful cult leader, but rather...
So much potential just lost.
Rather, he was just a little bit wacky. He didn't claim a monopoly on communication. See, if you examine a lot of cults, which...
But he was the chosen one.
Well, he was and he wasn't. Like, he definitely was the chosen one, for sure. But that doesn't mean that he's the only chosen one. And that's the difference. A lot of cults, if you'll look at them, and the Ashtar movement has been compared to a cult, the most important keystone...
Interesting.
Who would have thunk? The most important element here is a keystone, a leader that can speak directly to a higher power. Now, this affords the leader the opportunity to override any of the cult members' spiritual insights and revelations by claiming that they're simply not authentic. Van Tassel took a very different approach. If somebody was channeling Ashtar and he said something, it didn't necessarily have to agree with what Van Tassel was channeling Ashtar to say, but as long as it was consistent, he was pretty much fine. Ashtar himself, being an entity in the minds of the people, would never come out and decide to destroy mankind or anything like that, for that instance. So as long as he wasn't breaking the mythos, it was fine. It was really just like kind of a weekly interplanetary improv session is pretty much how I think of it. However, if somebody did break that or go against the kind of established narrative in a big sort of a way, that's when Van Tassel would say, you know, I don't think that's authentic. I don't think you're talking to the same person I'm talking to. And that's fine. Now, the Ashtar idea eventually moved far beyond Van Tassel and his own group of followers, and it became a cornerstone for the modern New Age movement. Soon, an offshoot of the movement began, which is known as Ashtar Galactic Command, which morphed the idea of Ashtar itself.
Is that a web series?
No, but it could be, and it should be. Instead of simply being one singular entity sending messages to the faithful, Ashtar became a title, a way of meaning intergalactic law enforcement, or space cops, as I like to think of them.
So, like, the whale dude from Stitch.
Yes, exactly. That would be Ashtar, because Ashtar...
What's his name again?
I have no idea.
He's like a
idea.
Giant killer whale-looking dude,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think it was like a hammerhead shark. But buff. Yeah. because Ashtar just means cop. It doesn't necessarily, it's not a proper name.
No way. No. Really? Does Ashtar just mean cop?
Well, no. That's what I mean in the newer reimagining of this. Now, Van Tassel, this is one of the things Van Tassel did break from and did have an issue with. When they channeled Ashtar, he claimed, they were channeling Ashtar, an individual, one person who was kind of the commander in chief for their galactic quadrant. So this whole idea of it just being, oh, there's many Ashtars and this and that, which is more in line with what we think of as New Age movements today, that's something that Van Tassel disagreed with. Now, in a way that Van Tassel seemingly approved of, however, and just as foundational to the New Age movement, Ashtar became accepted into this group of ascended masters. Okay, remember those from last week, the spiritually evolved beings existing in higher and different planes?
Yeah, Kairatai.
Hi. So, yes, good.
Were they not Kung Fu masters?
I'm sure they were. Whereas Ashtar began as a physical person, basically a person on a spaceship that got channeled and communicated directly with a human being, he grew and grew and grew into a more spiritual force rather than a physical flesh and blood being that's somewhere out there. And that Van Tassel was okay with, as long as the identity of Ashtar remained intact. Now, this meme of Ashtar, it grew in esoteric circles, and it every year, as we're going to see here in just a few minutes, Van Tassel held this symposium, a conference at Giant Rock, which he called the Giant Rock Spacecraft Convention, or Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention, where all believers were welcome to hear the good news of Ashtar and maybe even channel it themselves. Now, Ashtar broke into the public consciousness when on November 26th, 1977, during a nightly news report in, I want to say it was Sheffield in the United Kingdom, a broadcast interruption occurred and lasted for around 6 minutes. Now, during this, a deep, foreboding voice, identifying itself as Vrilion of Ashtar Galactic Command, addressed the listenership, or the viewership. And it claimed that it was responsible for the UFO sightings all over the Earth. The message that was communicated was mainly that the course that humanity is on threatens not only itself, but all the beings on all the planets around us as well. It advocated for a global disarmament, and mirroring last week's episode, it claimed that if peace could be obtained, higher stages of physical and technological evolution were waiting just beyond the veil for mankind. We were told that beings from other worlds walk among us even now, and finally, there was a goodbye. A, we've done our part, now you do yours, there's nothing else to be done that we can do for you until you learn this message of peace. Peace and light and love.
They couldn't also, you know, tell us about greenhouse gases.
Right. Or climate change in general.
That's the slow burn.
See, that's the thing.
That's the slow death that we're about to do.
That's what's really interesting is that I think I even referenced it before when we were talking about that sighting that took place, I want to say it was in Zimbabwe with like the 50 school children who saw the craft and then they drew the pictures and then John Mack interviewed them. Back in this time, it was still primarily this global nuclear disarmament that needed to occur. Now,
it's even one crisis after another.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what's right here in front of me?
Exactly.
And then we'll talk about this stuff later.
Even though nuclear weapons are still there, still scary, probably worse than before, I would think. Like, that's not what the aliens talk about as much. They
no,
still
it's
do
not
sometimes.
The hot topic.
No, but it is mainly climate change and destruction of the Earth through our own means of inaction and
well, I think that's
apathy.
Probably what's now more so on everyone's global consciousness.
Yeah. So are you saying that they're just making it up, or what are you saying? Why would it change?
I am saying that aliens and UFOs and contact like that is just a way for us to rationalize our own impending fears and doom.
All right. I like that. I can dig that. I'm okay with that.
And how we cope.
That's fair. This broadcast interruption, it was accompanied by an ominous pulsing. A vroom, vroom, vroom. That was good.
That was pretty good. I liked that.
And this increased in volume and frequency until, as opposed to a nice dubstep song where you may have a drop and then a breakdown, simply the conversation dropped and stopped, and there was nothing else. Now, again, we find here something very deserving of its own series of episodes, and maybe one day we'll get there. However, for now, there's another... It's interesting because it's a less enduring part of his legacy, but to me, it's the more important part of his legacy of George Van Tassel that I'd like to look at here. And this is regarding the events surrounding something known as the Integratron.
Ooh.
Ooh. Now, do you remember the other thing you texted me?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
What was it?
Well, Sam, why don't you... Well, you read it. You,
okay,
like,
let me...
Wrote
I'll
it
read
in
it.
The notes. Yeah.
I'll read it here. Now, if you think that Ashtar is the only galactic entity to have made contact with George Van Tassel, I'm going to have to ask you to either expand your mind or leave. And there he goes.
I left.
That's what he texted us.
Yes.
I left. So that worked. No, you're fine. You're okay. You could stay. Everybody else, if you don't believe that Van Tassel made contact with more than one extraterrestrial force, I do need you legally to turn off the podcast. You are not allowed to listen, okay? All right, cool.
Unless you want to hear me yell.
That's true. He's going to do some screaming. So, on August 24th, 1953, something that rocked Van Tassel's world all over again came to pass as he slept under giant rock. Now, this was when an entity known as Sogonda. Yeah, Sogonda. Woke,
it's powerful.
Thank you. Project. Woke Van Tassel from sleep with a telepathic prompting and communication. He was a member, and this should ring a bell. He was a member of the Council of the Seven Lights. Now, if you'll remember, approximately 3 minutes ago, that is also what Ashtar is part of. How interesting. They are part of the same council. I don't know if it's comprised of seven people. Well,
that's how he got his number.
That's true. Hey, what's that Earthling's name? You know the one.
That Van fella.
The Van guy.
I got something to tell him, too. Peace of my mind.
Now, he was told that he was about to be brought on board a ship that was the property of that same organization. And without a moment's hesitation, Van Tassel said yes. Yes, please. And he jumps out. He jumps out of bed. He runs up, and there on his airstrip, he sees a saucer-shaped craft. And without, again, a moment's hesitation, he runs aboard. And he's given a tour. Now, he's shown the select...
Episode of Cribs.
This, my crib, is a spaceship. You're welcome.
Sweet. It's like a mobile home. So, like,
it's basically a intergalactic trailer. Thank you very much. He was shown the celestial navigation instrumentation. He was shown the retractable seating and every aspect.
Retractables. Nice.
Space age technology.
Do you get to program it to whoever's piloting at the moment?
You know, my car from
presets?
My car from the year 2000 does not have presets. So I'd be very surprised if this spaceship does. Okay.
It's a spaceship. With retractable seating.
Retractable seating. Now, every aspect of this ship was explained to him in detail, telepathically.
Yeah,
and
yeah, but did it have, like, the gullwing doors?
You mean, like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Of course.
Totally. It's not a spaceship without it.
Perfect. Just making sure.
Yeah.
That's how I know it's a credible sighting. It's all about the gold wings, baby.
That's fair. And as he was shown about the ship, every aspect of it was explained to him in detail, telepathically. Now, the people who did this to him also referenced themselves as being Venusian. Van Tassel described them as being white, but with tan skin, and being exceedingly, like a dark white.
Yeah, man. You know. It's me during the summer.
Sure.
I get it.
Me, as I will never be. I am pale until the day I die. And they were, of course, exceedingly beautiful to behold. Almost unbearably beautiful to behold.
So we got like 12 Fabios, I got it.
12 Fabios. And they were all 700 years old.
Dang.
Right, they've been around. Now, they warned him as
Earth years or different years?
Well, so that's the thing, right? Because Ashtar had
our
to be...
Our time.
Yeah. Man. Years in your time. Ugh. Yeah, I hate that. Why even say it? As if you were going to say years and we were going to be like, oh, you mean your years. Your years, Ashtar. I know what that means, dummy. So I'm going to assume that because we're stupid humans, he meant our years. 700 of our years. Although that does seem impossible. So who knows? Now... Again, they warned him, as Ashtar had warned us all, of the danger of nuclear weapons and what will happen if we continue to pursue nuclear supremacy over each other, putting to death our brotherhood as men of Earth together. But he was given something just a little more as well. Something more than just a warning. In a move mirroring the Bible, in a certain respect, which Van Tassel, Adamski, and his colleagues were all very much believers of in their own way, Van Tassel was given instructions to build a structure which would help humanity survive into the coming of a new age of Earth. This, then, was the Integratron, a time machine for basic research on rejuvenation, anti-gravity, and time travel.
Whoa. It can do all three?
It can do it all.
Where do I sign up?
It's a bargain. Yeah. You know how back in the day, nowadays...
It's like an Instapot.
Exactly. Now we have our cell phones, and everything that was on a Radio Shack ad in 1995 is all within my cell phone now.
Yeah.
Same sort of concept. You no longer need to have a rejuvenation machine, an anti-gravity machine, and a time travel machine.
That frees up so much space on my countertop.
You have room for all sorts of new and wonderful things. Thanks, Integratron. Doo-doo-doo. So,
why couldn't he just given us air frying before?
That would have really helped,
yeah,
with the rejuvenation and the lifespan and
all
that.
At least for Americans.
Yeah. Now, in his own word, this is what was showed unto him and given the instructions, and he was given the instructions on how to build it. According to Van, it was meant to stand in the desert as a modern tabernacle, the dwelling place of God on earth, which was designed by God through Moses in the Old Testament. And the tabernacle was also used as a religious sanctuary and sacrificial site. But the Integratron was not that. While it was a place to encounter the divine...
We're getting real culty over here, Sam. Yeah, sure, this ain't a cult.
I'm sure. I am sure it is not a cult, or at least I don't think it's a cult.
I'm not too sure about that.
If it was a cult, what would have happened is they would have built the Integratron, and then Van Tassel would say something along the lines of, I am God, and this is now mine, and you have to listen to me. But that's not necessarily what it was. And according to Van Tassel, that's not what the tabernacle was either, because okay, it's this rewriting and saying that these things that we're pretty sure we know what they were used for were used for something completely different. Again, harken back to Daniel Fry and his whole reinterpretation of sacred text to fit his own little corporation that he founded.
Justification.
Yes, exactly. So the Integratron, this modern day reimagining of the tabernacle, what it did is that it was meant to discover practical applications, as we mentioned, of time travel and anti-gravity, but not how you would think.
I'm trying to think how that works, but okay, all right, Sam, how?
Now, it is, architecturally speaking, a large 16-sided dome measuring 38 feet high and 55 feet in diameter.
Wow.
But the method by which the Integratron functions was revealed to Van Tassel on that fateful night in 53, when Solgonda, the beautiful white alien... I hate. The beautiful white alien had taken him aboard the ship, landed at the Giant Rock airstrip. It was revealed to Van Tassel that the reason Giant Rock was so special, beyond it having a giant rock, is that it was
Could find it out here in the desert. It's the only landmark. You really can't miss it.
It's the Giant Rock. Is that if you see more desert, you've gone too far. Is that it intersects, it's on a grid that intersects with places like the Great Pyramids of Giza and other spiritual sites that all have in them the same inherent power.
So, I love this, because we only have 2 points.
Shut up.
Of course it's going to intersect.
You are correct. You are very correct. But Van,
well, you don't say.
That didn't bother Van Tassel, and you know what? It doesn't bother me. It's this age-old concept of, well, I don't actually know how old it is. It might be fairly new, of ley lines, and this idea that there are spiritually or literally, physically, energetically charged routes through the earth wherein spiritual energy flows.
It's called tectonic plates.
Yeah, kind of.
They are lines.
Tectonic plates, but for the soul.
It's energetic.
Tectonic plates for the soul. Chicken noodle soup for the soul, tectonic plates for the soul. That's where my mind was there. He does. He says other such sites, but he doesn't say what they are, so we can't really plot it out on a map.
Oh, darn.
Yep.
If only he gave us the knowledge to do that. Instead of building a 16-sided dome.
But it holds in itself.
Our horrible human minds can't handle it.
We can't handle three places on a list.
We can't handle spiritual energy. We can barely handle atomic.
It's true. Now, it has the same inherent source of power and energy that the ancients harnessed in past ages. And of course that...
Ah, but the ancients, they were wise enough.
They were wise enough. They were not corrupted as we were. Of course, he was given the insights that these past achievements were also created due to the help of extraterrestrials, as you might imagine.
Clearly.
He also was told that Noah's Ark, Moses' tabernacle in the wilderness, the pyramids, all sorts of things, really everything.
Perfect.
Was constructed by the same aliens telling us to build some big old stuff.
Why didn't they just give us, you know, their used, worn out spaceships?
This is Jimmy the Kid. And if you've got a pyramid you're not using, I will take it off your hands. I will do the transportation. I will install it on the ley lines. You just call me Jimmy the Vesuvian Kid, okay?
I feel like he's going to, like, open up a giant trench coat and be like, hey, yo, you can eat this little seed. This little seed will get you access to that ley line over there.
Well, no, it's like remember at the end of, I'm sure we've mentioned this a lot. Key. No, the end of Men in Black, where they're just playing marbles with the... It's the same thing. He opens up his trench coat, and it's just like marbles. Pyramids. Just a lot of pyramids hanging from his coat.
You soak it in water. You remember those dinosaur eggs?
What I'm
just
saying,
soak them in water.
What I'm saying is that he is...
They'll grow for you.
Immeasurably large.
Ah, okay.
He is
That's more...
godlike, this Jimmy the used pyramid salesman. He buys them, too, so keep that in mind.
Okay.
Now...
Well, he's got to turn a profit, right? How does he sell the Maxos?
I do not know where we
are. What currency does he use? I'm really concerned for Jimmy and
Space Bucks.
And his business plan.
Whew. Okay. Now, thank you. Thank you.
I hope Jimmy doesn't have family to feed, too.
He does. He does. And they're all gigantic.
I assume.
Now, Van Tassel, he would often talk about how humankind was essentially flawed in one very, very big way. We die.
Wait a second. This is something I can get behind.
You might be surprised.
Tell me more.
You may be surprised to learn who else got behind this, and we'll get there in a moment. We die. Now, he reasoned that by the time that you really know anything at all, and that you could do anything with that knowledge, old age had slowed you, and death would soon stop you for good. So this then was the first and primary purpose of the Integratron. The extension of the human lifespan.
Okay. Lay some alien knowledge on me. How does this thing work?
Well, in his own words, he said that the solution was, quote, a high-voltage electrostatic generator that would supply a broad range of frequencies to recharge cellular structure. So his thesis statement here, his TED Talk, is about how your cells have energy, and then they lose energy, and then they die. And then you die. You still want to invest? You still on board? He often would nope, he's gone again. That's fine. I can do the rest myself. He often would...
It's not how it works! It's not how cells work!
It's not a cell.
It's the reason why you eat! That's how they recharge, you stupid ass alien.
You should see him. His hair is wild. He is drinking deeply from the cup of cold
brew,
which sustains him.
I don't care if you use a giant Tesla coil in a stupid ass dome. That's not how cells work.
I can't wait to make little sounds to edit out all the swears. It's going to be great. Well, you're wrong, okay? Because you
what?
Know... How do you explain a car battery?
A car battery.
It also...
If you say has cells, I'm going to be murdering you.
Wait, I'm
going to
do... Well, it does have cells.
It does. But they're not the same types of cells we have.
Let me do this.
What is that supposed
this
to be?
This is my Matrix. I'm doing that part in the Matrix where Morpheus brings up the D-cell battery and rotates it when he reveals that we are nothing but batteries. It's that same sort of thought.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to take a moment.
All right.
The Matrix would have been 12 times better if they're just using us and our brains for, like, computing power.
I know, you said this last episode, yeah. Jason.
I can't... Really?
Mm-hmm.
Man, dude, time is weird.
Literally the exact same phrase.
Like, batteries? Take 3 seconds in Google. I guess Google wasn't around in the 99. I was, but, like, it was bad.
Dark days.
The internet didn't know what it was becoming yet. It was still in, like, puberty. Anyway.
You good?
Yeah.
Anything else? You can take all the time you want to tell me how things work.
I'm going
to
talk about how we can live forever with real science.
Oh, that's dope. Okay.
You're welcome.
So, he did. He compared this to the charging of a car battery. He claimed the reason that we age and die is that our cells run out of energy and we have no way to recharge them. Now, the solution, he claimed, was a armature, which was 55 foot in diameter. It was a coil of sorts that was supposed to levitate in the air, rotating at high speeds. And it was equipped with 64 aluminum static collectors, which would collect 50,000 volts of static electricity, which would be distributed amongst the participants and revitalize their cellular energies in order to prolong their life and return their bodies. Here's the important part. Return their bodies to a pre-age state. You would regress your physical age. This then is the anti-gravity function, because the armature itself, by the way that it generated electricity,
it lifts my skin.
it lifts itself up into the air and it stays up there. And then this too is the rejuvenation, but it is also, maybe unexpectedly, the meaning that he meant when he talked about time travel. According to Van Tassel, the machine does not physically cause one to move backwards or forwards
through
time.
This guy upselled me way hard.
you cannot...
Empty promises here.
Backwards.
This is not an Instapot whatsoever.
This is one thing.
Yeah.
This is like an Instapot that only does one thing. And you know what that is?
A
rice
crock
cooker. Or a crock pot.
Your crackpot.
Or any one of the other 9 other things that an instant pot is. I think that might be my favorite thing that's happened to me this month. Oh, Lord.
Right. You're welcome.
Thank you. It just perfectly...
I thought it was funny, but not that funny.
It was awesome. It perfectly illustrated the way that I set a rice cooker and you set a crackpot. It perfectly illustrates... how great Instant Pot is. Like, it's all of these things. Ah, hell, this is great. All right.
If you don't have one, treat yourself.
Treat yourself to an Instant Pot. All right. So, of course, you cannot move physically to the past or to the future, backwards or forwards in time, because that's impossible. But rather...
Sam, can I get that, like... Oh, well, I mean, we're recording it.
This is Van Tassel saying it, not me.
Oh.
He's the one who said it was impossible. But rather...
Aren't we always time-traveling if we're going to the future?
Whoa. Past that.
Whoa, the future? Like right now, then.
No, I meant past the joint, because you're smoking pot.
Oh, okay.
That was a high person thing to say.
Well,
Lord.
It's the pots, man.
It's like that Jay-Z line where he talks about selling coke and he's like, that's what I call an Instagram or something like that. That's the line. But you could say, that's what I call an Instapot.
It's doing all the things, man. Doing all the things.
Good Lord. Okay. But instead, you cause your body to... philosophically or theoretically or whatever, move backwards in time to a time where it was not so old and gross as you might imagine for the kind of people who thought that such a thing was possible. This was a very big deal, and although the world at large laughed at Van Tassel, he had quite a few people who did more than believe in him. They even backed him financially.
No.
Now, Beginning shortly after the revelation of the Integratron, Van Tassel began, he continued holding these weekly meditation and channeling sessions for believers under Giant Rock, but he also started a tradition that continues to this day, which was the annual gathering of a large number of UFO enthusiasts at or around Giant Rock. Now, the first convention took place in 53. Like I said, this is the Giant Rock Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. And as it started in 53, it then went over the next 24 years.
Couldn't it just been Spacecraft Convention?
I know. It could have. You would think.
It's a little redundant being interplanetary.
Yeah, he's not a great brander.
I mean, if it lasted this long.
Could have used a marketing team. Pretty much anybody worth their salt in ufology had attended one of these conferences at least once by the time that they shut down. People like last week's subjects, Adamski and Fry, as well as our final subject in the contactee series, which we're going to be talking about next week, a man by the name of Orfeo Angelucci, as well as many more people. This was also, like I said, there were these group channeling sessions, and they would all channel to each other and have like a nice little Ashtar improv session. And while the official convention didn't last past Van's death, it has been replaced by a spiritual successor, the Contact in the Desert Conference. It is literally my dream to go, and Jason and I are doing our darndest to make it there this year, but if we can't go this year, we will definitely be going next year. I even sent them a message saying we were press people. I was like, they were like, if you're press, click here. And I was like, heck, I'm press. Why
basically
not? Basically. And I was like, please give me tickets to your convention. So they're going to let me know. I'm going to guess it's going to be a no, but that's fine. Especially if they listen to this episode, it's definitely going to be a no, and that's okay too. Anyway, so we're going
to
try to...
Unless they want to feel like they're legit or something. I don't
know. Well...
You know?
I will, if they respond to me at all with like deeper concerns, or if they do like listen, they're like, we're worried that you guys kind of seem to be making fun of the kinds of things we talk about.
What?
But like... This year, the people who are going to be there, supposedly Jacques Vallée is going to be there. I can't find his name on the actual schedule, though. You're going to have Whitley Strieber there. You're going to have Nick Pope. You're going to have Giorgio Tsoukalos from the guy from Ancient Aliens.
Oh,
with
no,
the meme.
Hair. Yeah.
You're going to have David Childress, David Wilcock, Graham Hancock. You're going to have all of these people at one place.
So what you're telling me is I need to be sedated.
You need to be high to get through this, okay? And if we go, I don't care what you do, because I'm going to go to as many UFO talks as I can. I'm going to go stargazing. You can rent night vision goggles for $5 to look for UFOs on top of a mountain. And, of course, there are outings to Giant Rock and the Integratron, so I'm going to do that. I just really want to go to this, so we'll see what happens. Like I said, if it's not this year, I'm going to make it priority number one next year, and we'll see, but... Oh, I got really excited there. Whew.
That's good. That's all good.
I gotta calm down for a second there. Anyway, so yeah, that's Contact in the Desert. It sounds super cool. That's what I was gonna say, is that if they write me back, I will tell them that, like, yes, we have differing ideas about things, and yes, one of us believes things, one of us does not, and even then, I don't necessarily...
I believe in things. It's called science.
Yeah, I don't necessarily seem to believe in everything that they're gonna be talking about, but I will just mention that, like, we will be covering, if we can go to this, these 4 days, we will literally have content for a month, if not 2 months. And we will devote a lot of time to it. And maybe they'll get somebody and maybe they won't. They'd literally only have to sell like 3 tickets to make it, or probably like 5 to 6 tickets to make it worth their while to not only give us tickets to the event, but pay for us to go out there and stay at the hotel. So we'll see.
Ooh.
I'd really love to do this.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be wild.
Anyway.
Okay, sorry. My bad. I let my dreams get away from me again. Now, using the money that he made from the conferences, as well as some very well-off backers, Van Tassel poured money into this life rejuvenation machine. Now, one of the most high-profile people said to have been associated with, and I haven't seen the exact paper trail, but I'm pretty sure it's a pretty legit quote-unquote accusation, is that of Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes,
the elusive mogul.
Interesting.
Who was known for obsessive compulsive tendencies and a crippling fear of old age and death.
Yeah, so, DiCaprio played him in Aviator.
The Aviator. Supposedly, he pumped some money into this, which would make sense, theoretically, because...
Everyone's afraid of death.
Yeah, well, that, A, yes. But also because Van Tassel did work for Hughes Aircraft for a time. Like, he was employed by Howard Hughes and may have met him, for all we know. But regardless of that, Van would never see his beloved Integratron completed. He passed away in 1978 at the age of 67, and when he did, almost all work stalled on the Integratron until it was purchased 8 years later by a couple of individuals with the means to follow Van Tassel's blueprints and complete the project. It now stands in the desert, no longer meant to produce anti-aging effects, but rather...
What?
Yeah.
I don't want to go anymore.
The new owners kind of abandoned that part of it.
That's what I love about, like, crazy claims from 70 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that, well, nowadays it's easy to just be like, that's completely wrong.
Yeah. Well, you know, who knows? He had some ideas, but, you know, we got this nice structure here, so we might as well use it. You know, yeah, it's fine. I know, it's always interesting to see, like,
shade.
To see, like, these different ideas that begin in more quote-unquote primitive, I mean, 100 to 200 years ago, to see them move and change and morph. And what you always see is this kind of movement away and distancing from that original claim.
Right.
Because
now we know that's just flat out wrong.
And here's the thing. Okay, so, well, let me say this. So Integratron, it did get finished. Nowadays, what you can do is, it's a really acoustically interesting place because of the way it's shaped, as there's not a speck of metal in the place. It's all wood. It's all wood that's joined through joinery together. Hinging and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's really acoustically interesting. There have been...
I'm sure it's also really interesting because there's, like, nothing else around it for miles.
Yeah. And there have been, like, albums recorded there and, like, music produced there. So that's pretty cool. You can go, though. The main thing that it's famous for is this process known as a sound bath, wherein you go in, there are all sorts of, like, singing bowls sort of things, and then, like, acoustically different sounds and stuff that supposedly just wash over you. And nobody's there claiming that it's going to heal your diseases. No one's saying it's going to make you live forever, but it does just...
No one's scamming you.
Yeah, that's what's nice.
But it brings a rejuvenating mental state.
Mentally, exactly. And so there's like one... I read one article about... I think it may have been from Vice. It may have been from somebody else who went to the Integratron and like they did a sound bath and stuff, and they met a guy who was like, he was like a totally normal person who lived in the Bay Area somewhere, and like he did this one time and then he immediately booked 5 more sessions in the future because it just like it just did something nice for him.
Felt
it just made him feel good. Yeah. And so that's what's nice about the Integratron, is it is gimmicky for sure. Like it's totally like its own thing, but it's not.
Oh yeah, but
dishonest.
They reused and recycled.
Exactly, exactly. And you can take place in other like less, more other things like energy healing and stuff like that, which I don't see as very credible. But again, no one's telling you you're gonna like become young again,
right.
And stuff like this. So
it's all state of mind.
It is. It is. Youth is a state of mind. Now. The Integratron and massive popularity of Giant Rock, they are my favorite things and probably the most relevant to this show that Van Tassel has left behind. But when I say that...
Because they're actually physically there?
Well, yes. But when I say that Van Tassel built...
It's not often for us that we actually have physical
that you
things.
Can go to, yeah.
Usually it's just claims and pictures that mysteriously vanish.
Gone. When I say that Van Tassel built the roof and the second story to this.
Now I see what you did there.
Thank you. It is not necessarily those things that did it. It really is to me this difference between him and George Adamski. George Adamski was a literally, I think of him as like a fiendish man, like a very greedy, very happy to abuse people's trust and this and that and the other thing. Like, Adamski was just in this for a buck, as we see with his Royal Order of Tibet bootlegging business that he passed off as a religion. Like,
my kind of guy.
Admirable in its own weird ways.
Get around taxes that way.
But like, Adamski to me is just in it for that quick buck. People believed him, whatever. When he moved away from the ancient and royal or whatever order of Tibet and away from that channeling and stuff, he left this hole, and that hole was filled by Ashtar and Ashtar Galactic Command. This
Ashtar Galactic Command.
Exactly. It sounds like Buzz Lightyear. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It is, I believe truly, it is literally this situation, this Ashtar, which combined the Ascended Master philosophy with the UFO philosophy in a way that, unlike Adamski, that Van Tassel could not, even if he wanted to, have ripped apart, because there were dozens of messages from Ashtar. They were propagated around the world, especially as people came to the Giant Rock Convention. They met, they talked, they left, and then they spread that as well. That, to me, while it's not my favorite thing about Van Tassel, it is the thing that he did the most for the New Age movement and for the UFO movement in general. And that's why I say, whether for better or worse, things would not be the same if he was not still around. That being said, I still don't believe Van Tassel. I don't believe Fry. And the reason I don't believe Fry is because he talks about, like, oh, he's the chosen one. That's the narrative you get from that. Adamski and Van Tassel, they're special, but they're not the chosen one. Fry's the chosen one, and the chosen one doesn't exist. It's just not how things work. I don't believe Adamski because he was a bootlegger and a con man.
That's fair.
I don't believe Van Tassel because, even though he's not as, I don't think of him as malicious, and Adamski wasn't malicious, he was just out for himself. Van Tassel was there to spiritually help other people. Like, he made that a big thing of inviting people in and, like, let's do this, and, you know, we're all going to channel together, and UFOs are real, and I went on one, and everything's going to be okay. And, like, the fact that the Integratron never got finished, and that he never used it as an opportunity to, like, because he also didn't just take the money and leave and get rich. He like, lived here and died here, and the Integratron was never completed. And so I don't trust him because I think that he's still just kind of using the narratives of the day to propel what he wanted, which was to be a guru, not a cult leader, but a guru, and somebody who knew this wisdom and helped people find themselves, which is not a bad thing, but I don't think he was being authentic.
Well, that's still a con man.
It is still a con man. It is. And that's why I'm saying I don't think he's particularly authentic. I think what's really interesting is if you look at the Ashtar religion, quote unquote religion, you see, like, this really fascinating. It starts with Van Tassel. Then there are these channeling sessions. There's the Interplanetary Spacecraft Conference. And Van Tassel, his ideas then branch out. And they get bigger and bigger and crazier and crazier. And then the internet comes. And when the internet comes, the Ashtar community finds each other. And suddenly you see it go back into this singular point. And they, like, denounce people who are saying, like, contradictory things, and they are creating an official narrative. It's a really interesting situation. It's one of the first UFO religions, and that's what it is in its own way, is a religion, a belief that something higher is going to save you. And, like,
so wait, all three of our contactees, you don't fully support?
I don't support even a little bit. Like, okay, I don't support Fry, and I don't support Adamski at all. I support Van Tassel because I think he was trying to do okay. I think he had good intentions.
You think that all said and done, on his life counter, he was net positive?
Yes.
Okay.
But the person we're going to talk about next week, who I did not anticipate believing in, is the one. He's the one.
The chosen one?
He's not the chosen one. And I don't believe him all the way. I don't believe exactly what he says, but I believe that he believes it, which is something that's different from the other three. I don't think that they believed what they were actually doing and saying at the end of the day.
Interesting. Okay.
They may have bought into it over time and like convinced themselves, but like, I don't think they believed it as much as Orfeo Angelucci truly believed what happened to him.
Okay.
And he is who we'll be talking about next week as we wrap up and end our 5-part series on the Cold War and UFOs and our 3-part series on contactees. So that's what I got.
Fantastic.
That's what I got for Verfantassel. What do you think?
I've got, give me 3 minutes.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so normally when I hear something about rejuvenation or living forever, it perks my ears because I am terrified about my own morality.
Crippling fears.
Terrified about it. So
I understand.
Let's talk about how that is theoretically possible at this point in time.
Okay.
It does come down to our cells. The cells are incredibly important, but as of right now, our cells are kind of pre-programmed to eventually just fail and die. Neil deGrasse Tyson, no. I don't know why I was going there. Bill Nye, on his Netflix TV series, actually does have an episode about like living forever.
Okay.
And it's actually pretty good. So if you want just like an overview, 20 minutes, go watch that and help save the world. Anyway, the issue comes down to is that when our cells divide, they copy over our chromosomes, and our chromosomes have essentially these, they're called telomeres, and every time I hear anyone describe them, they refer to them like the little plastic bits at the end of our shoelaces. Those telomeres help protect our chromosomes so that they don't essentially go bad once they get duplicated over. Well, a little bit of those telomeres get worn away every time our cells divide. So essentially, our cells do have sort of like this programmed self-destruct sequence.
Planned obsolescence.
Exactly. So that's one thing that we have to get over. We have to find out how we can essentially rejuvenate those to keep our cells dividing properly. Secondly, when a cell does kind of die, one thing that can happen to your cells is something kind of referred to as like a zombie cell, where it will stop dividing, but it doesn't actually die. It still absorbs energy through what you're eating, and essentially almost becomes kind of like cancerous, but the reverse, because cancer just divides indefinitely. This one just essentially becomes junk lying around in your body, and our systems themselves can't like break them down or get rid of them. Our white blood cells don't do that. So essentially, we just have this pile of junk that is also secreting kind of like this, I'm not going to say mucus, but it is also interfering with what the cells around it that are alive and healthy do. It's kind of like having a banana that gets overly ripe with the rest of your fruit. Well, the rest of your fruits are going bad a lot quicker too. Kind of that same idea.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So essentially, we have to fix our telomeres. We also have to help our bodies clean up these cells that are no longer useful to us. And both of those things are pretty hard to do. Now, lastly, something that we can do is actually, it's been shown in lab rats, and of course, with human life, it's a lot harder to do, but intermittent fasting is actually shown to be kind of helpful in this idea.
Are you kidding me, Jason?
Now, this is the reason why, though.
Jason.
Because... and it has to do with energy.
Wait, really quick. The other day, Jason and I were sitting in the break room. I said, Jason, how are you doing? He said, oh, I'm a little tired. I said, oh, what's wrong, buddy? And he said, I didn't get to sleep. I only got 5 hours of sleep. I woke up, and now I'm not going to eat until when? When was it?
I didn't eat until like 6:30 that night.
Until 6 o'clock. He had previously eaten at 1 a.m., gotten 5 hours of sleep, woken up probably at 8 or 9, and then went until 6 p.m. without eating.
And I felt great after.
No! I
was
refuse to believe
like
that!
Junk. I had to reset my dietary. Like...
So when you talk about intermittent fasting being the key to eternal life, it just makes me shake my head.
Not eternal. So what it comes down to is that generally speaking, our cells are a lot like us, where we have ample supply, we tend to waste, and we tend to use up too much. So intermittent fasting in lab rats have showed that our cells protect themselves a whole lot more if they don't have as much readily resources entering their bodies. So the cells themselves last longer than normal cells would, theoretically. So we've got some things that we have to overcome, none of which have to do with electrostatic energy.
I know. If you're, like, popping 50,000 volts into the air, someone's going to die, I'm pretty sure.
Hopefully, you don't have a pacemaker.
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, that's all I needed.
Do you think it is more likely that we will learn how to address those physical concerns faster than we learn how to map whatever the human mind is and transfer it to a computer?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think looking at cells, I think are actually incredibly simple compared to human consciousness.
That's fair. Yeah, at least there are known quantity. There have been
like a few aging scientists that are like, the person that will live to be 1,000 has already been born.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that too.
Like, there's been a few claims like that already, and we have done a lot better at extending our age. We've done pretty good at that. Some of the biggest issues as well is really those types of diseases that deteriorate our minds.
Mm.
Alzheimer's is going to be the big one that we'll have to overcome for anyone to be at all useful if we ever do make it to a millennial.
And the shortening of telomeres doesn't have anything to do with dementia, as far as we know?
I don't know that much.
We don't know that much. That's fine.
I don't know that much.
Yeah.
Sam, I'm not a scientist. I'm a science enthusiast.
That's fair.
It's different. I get things wrong frequently. But it makes me hopeful.
Okay.
And also the problem is, too, is that like we need to also focus on making sure that people get to, especially in like third world countries where people still die at the age of 5 pretty frequently.
Oh,
like that's another hurdle that we have to get over for mankind as well. But I think the anti-aging stuff is going to make a lot more profit in the long run for pharmaceuticals.
Oh, yeah.
So you never know how it's going to actually shake up.
Yeah.
But my fingers are crossed.
That's interesting.
If I can rejuvenate my knees, that'd be sweet.
It's over. It's over. His knees are gone. That's interesting. I just wonder when the time is going to come that we no longer make abstract ideas about how things like memory and about the deterioration of the mind and this and that. We have an understanding, but we cannot locate the specific whatever it is that makes a memory the same way that we can about what makes our heart and our lungs and this and that. And so I wonder when that is going to happen, and those answers that I wonder if we'll ever know. But that's the point, is that I think that it is going to be much easier for us to say, okay, we understand the human body fairly well at this point. It will be easier to save that and repair that. And I would also think preferable to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, for example, clearing out useless cells that are essentially wearing down other cells that are actually important. Being able to do that, that'd be like a full body treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a full treatment. Same thing with telomeres and everything like that. That and the cells in our brain don't divide too frequently.
Yeah.
I don't think they really do, if I remember right. Like our brain, the cells in our brains are like the oldest, I think. But still, like these treatments, quote unquote, that would potentially come out in the next few decades or so, that potentially will just have the side benefit of hopefully keeping our minds young as well.
Yeah. 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 We'll see how interrelated they are, to be sure, in ways that we may not currently know, but that's all fun speculation for another day. I actually have something planned on that, about talking about death and what we might be able to do to avoid it, but it's quite a bit off anyways. So in any case, thus ends part 2 of part 3, part 4 of part 5, and part 2 of part 3. Did I already say that? I did say that. So, I don't know exactly everything I just said,
I'm
but
so
it worked.
Confused.
In any case, we would just like to thank you for being here with us. We would like to thank you for being our friends. We'd like to thank you for listening to us yell and be upset with ourselves and each other. And we'd especially like to thank...
there we go.
We'd especially like to thank the individuals who left us iTunes reviews this week. We didn't have any new patrons. That's okay.
You were just stalling until you looked it up, huh?
We didn't have any new patrons, and that's okay. We understand. We would like to thank all of our patrons for literally keeping the lights on. We are so grateful for all of you who contribute every month to the show. And if we do end up making it to Contact in the Desert, it will be you who take us there. So we love you. We appreciate you. But we would also like to specifically thank the individuals who left us iTunes reviews this week. That is Santos Dave, Brad, and Barefoot Indy. I'm going to go ahead and read Barefoot Indies because I want to believe it's Indiana Jones, but as a hippie. Wearing nice. No shoes. Barefoot Indy says, paranormal palaver, which I think is like a lot of things together, like a cornucopia. Is that what a palaver is?
Those are big words, Sam.
I know that a palantir is a seeing stone used by Saruman. So let's just double check what palaver means. I am more versed in those kinds of words than the real ones. Oh, it means prolonged and idle discussion, which I can dig that too. It's still a 5-star review, so you can say whatever you want if you're giving me 5 stars. Paranormal Palaver by Barefoot Indy. So glad I gave this podcast a second chance.
Oh, dear.
Hell yeah. At first, on my first listen, I was put off by silly banter and frequent tangents. Wow. That's
how we do.
Especially this episode. But I gave it another shot, and now it's become one of my favorites. It's like hanging out with two friends, joking around while we discuss our favorite paranormal topics. I loved Jeff the Talking Mongoose and the Talking Stove. Thank you very much. Have you done the Bell Witch? I think those three are related, for maybe they are the same entity. That's interesting. And I am fascinated by the trickster motif that shows up in so many areas, from fairies to poltergeists to skinwalkers. Nice. Thank you, Barefoot Indy. We have not done the Bell Witch. We are going to do the Bell Witch. Astonishing Legends just did such a good job with the Bell Witch that I'm always like, ugh. You have
to, like, literally.
You have
cool
to
down.
Distance it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they did Orfeo Angelucci like a year or so ago, and now, tomorrow, or not tomorrow, next week, we're going to talk about him. So, we will do the Bell Witch eventually. I also like the trickster motif and, like, trickster gods and stuff like that. So, that might be a fun, just, like, overall show we could do sometime. But in any case, thank you for your review. Thank you, everyone who leaves us iTunes reviews. They really, truly do, if nothing else, make our day. Theoretically, they like help our rankings and stuff, but whatever, we're past that. We are where we are. We've never made it in the top 10, and I don't know that we ever will. But we are still so happy to know that we are bringing people joy, and we are helping somewhere at least. So
maybe we should start doing a disclaimer before every episode.
No.
Being like, hey, if you came here for facts,
you're listening to the wrong show.
Exactly.
Get out. Let people figure it out on their own. That's my philosophy.
That's okay.
So, Jason, do you have anything else?
No.
All right. You can find us on Facebook at Not Alone Podcast, or join our Facebook group /meme page. Not mean page. Don't be a jerk. Don't be mean. We don't appreciate that. Thank
yeah,
you.
Because then Sam will have to be mean and moderate things.
Yeah, I don't like moderating. Don't make me moderate. In any case, you can join our Facebook group or meme, nice happy meme page. Remember, we are not alone, a community for the strange. You can follow us on Twitter at Not Alone Pod. Jason's on Not Alone Pod. Jason's on Twitter at
Mighty Moit,
and I am on Twitter at Beerlord Elfbane. You can email us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com. You can send us your personal stories at notalonepodstories@gmail.com as well, if you'd like to let us know some things that have happened to you so that we can potentially use them in future episodes. So
it's always fun to see whether or not you're going to get everything. You're like, that's fair. I see it. Just wheels turning. Like, check.
Where
check,
was I?
Got it. Oh, I forgot this one.
Who knew? Beyond that, you can find us
in the vast
wherever,
cosmos.
Yeah, wherever you want.
You find
we
podcasts.
Are there. And also in this, not to be like plugging too much, in this wonderful holiday season, we do have a little bit of merch, a tiny bit of merch at threadless.notalonepodcast.com.
We're still doing Threadless, huh?
Yeah, we've sold like 4 t-shirts all in all.
Nice.
So it's solid. It's good. In any case, so if you want like t-shirts, hoodies, that sort of thing, that'd be dope too. So I think we're going to relaunch that eventually, but we'll see. So with all that, you did it last week.
I sure did.
It's 87, so I'm even, or I'm odds, and you're even. So, yep.
Yeah, you are.
Remember, whether you are hiding from your troubles under a giant rock in the desert, or attempting to hide from your troubles anywhere else, this sucks, you are not alone.